No popcorn. No soft drinks. No bottled water. No bagels. You just have to watch without. But back in May, the professional meeting that I go to at Myrtle Beach, and they got us mixed up, I guess, with the bikers, because I emailed from the CMS the other day thanking me for coming to the bike week in May and urging me to register now for the bike week, the bike rally in Myrtle Beach in October. I deleted that one. Over a couple of days, we had discussions about the church and who's coming to church and those kinds of things. And what I want to do this evening is part of the program and part of our discussion. When we think about who is coming to church and what is the shape of the church and why is there one on every other corner and in some places every corner, and all those kinds of things. And I know you will be very shocked, but the title of this presentation was Guess Who's Coming to Church? And it's not Sidney Poitier. This is a day and an age where we have all kinds of situations regarding the church, all kinds of churches present. And the question, guess who's coming to church, is critical. If the church is going to survive, and if the church is going to do more than simply mark time and survive. We have all kinds of situations within churches these days where, as I said a while ago, you go in and you get your Starbucks and your bagel and you go and eat and drink and participate for a while, but there are others that are more traditional and others that try and go in between. But this is a critical question. And it's not your parents' church anymore. A lot of situations. It's not your parents' church. The boomers' parents, that is, those whom Tom Brokaw called the greatest generation, at least took their children, the boomers, to church. And I included this because my dad did this, and though dads were often outside smoking when the children went into the sanctuary, you know, in between, they smoked before they went in Sunday school, and then after Sunday school they had to get at least one in before going into church. Many parents didn't just take their children and drop them off, but many parents went to church, stayed, and participated in Sunday school and in worship, singing in the choir, doing other things. But we're finding that that's not necessarily the case in time since then. Boomers, and I am one, but boomers were not as likely to take their children, especially during the late 60s and into the 70s and early 80s. Boomers were not as likely to take the children to church, and especially not as likely to be there with them. Some of them use the excuse, well, I had religion forced on me and I don't want to foist that onto my children. They can decide for themselves when they're old enough. Of course, what often happens is the decision is, well, I haven't been going, so why should I go now when I can do all of these other things? And so these questions and these situations are extremely critical. And I know that a number of churches are dealing with these kinds of questions across the board. What do we do? How do we do church? As boomers have aged, their children, I really don't like the either of these terms, but these are the terms that have been used to describe the children of the baby boomers. Baby boomers, of course, are those born from 46 to 64, roughly. That is, you know, they call them the busters. We were the boomers, they call them the busters. Or Generation X. Have not had the moorings to keep them close to church. And as more and more things have been made available out there, not just with the internet, but more and more entertainment, as boomers became more affluent and started having boats and other things, it was more convenient just to go ahead and, you know, you work Monday through Friday and you're tired and maybe you work in the yard on Saturday, well, you got another day that you can do something with that you don't have to go to work, and more folks would go out on the lake or other places rather than come in and bring the children in. And so the children have fewer moorings overall, fewer ties to the church. Also, with some of the boomers, but especially with Generation X or the busters, and then now what they're calling the millennial generation, their children, it's been more and more of a shopper's mentality. Smokey Robinson. The old song, "You better shop around." In most everything, including religion. There's a shopper's mentality. I'm paying for a product, I'm paying for a service, and I'll shop around. If I don't like this one, I'll shop somewhere else. And when I get tired of that one, I'll shop somewhere else. If the church doesn't give me what I want, I just better shop around. And especially the 20 to 40 somethings are of a mindset, I'm paying for a service. If I don't get the service that I want, then I'll switch to another cell phone provider. Going to the commercials that are going around these days. But they're using that for church. If I don't get what I want, not necessarily what I need, but if I don't get what I want or desire, then I'll just switch. I'll go shop at another one. The Gen Xers or the busters and their children, the millennials, will pay $100 or more for a pair of jeans. Some of them run you $300 now. They got holes in them and they're, you know, all kinds of things. But they'll pay $100 or more for a pair of jeans. They will give sometimes to social causes. They'll raise money to go on a mission trip, which unfortunately a lot of times turns into more fun than mission. But won't go around in a neighborhood to do missions and won't give money to support the budget of the church, the local church. We talked this morning about tithing and not, you know, tithing your money as well as doing other things. But many of the Gen X and their children, the millennials, I mean, they'll pay for all kinds of other things. They're paying for those items or those services that they want. But they won't support the church budget, and if you try to get them together to go out in the neighborhood and do things or do a cleanup around the church, they're not the ones that come. They have less ties to those kinds of things. So what about the demographics of Generation X and the millennials? The children and the grandchildren of we who are the boomers. They're born anywhere from mid to late 70s, the 1980s, and the early 1990s. They are, in many ways, more diverse, and their society is more diverse than previous generations. I mean, you've got all kinds of things out there, and society becomes even more and more diverse, and there's really less demand for responsibility. But the interesting thing is they tend to be more conservative politically and religiously than their parents, the boomers. Of course, we who are the boomers, we were also the ones with Woodstock and all that kind of stuff. And we're socially conscious, and many against the, you know, Vietnam, and others not. And but politically and religiously, it's really interesting that Generation X, or the busters, our children, we who are among the boomers, and their children are more conservative. And you see that across the board. I used to see that in the seminary at Gardner Webb. And in fact, the folks that are going into ministry, the average age in seminary 5 years ago was almost 34 years old, and it's almost up to 36 years old now. Folks, most of the folks that are going to seminary and preparing for ministry are second career folks. And they fall, there's not much middle ground. They're either very socially conscious and aware on one end, or they're extremely socially limited and even more conservative on the other end. Which you would think, with all the diversity out there in the culture, they wouldn't be as, you know, more conservative, but they are. They are. And they are community-minded, but I don't mean community-minded as in getting out and doing missions in the community. They're more interested in their own community, the circles in which they run, and how they fit in with their peers. Belonging to that peer group and having the approval of their peers is extremely important. More important than the approval of not just parents, but others out there. They talk about being spiritual, and they say, we're spiritual. In fact, in many surveys, when you ask folks from their mid-teens to their late 30s to describe their religious heritage and their religious experience and their religious practice, many of them, in fact, the majority of them in a number of studies will say that they're spiritual and they're looking for things that are spiritual, but they're not religious. They separate the two, religion and spirituality. Compartmentalize so that they can shop around once again. What's really strange, too, is there are a number of folks that are in the Gen X and millennial generation out there who are, they don't want to be tied to the traditional church and don't want to worship in the traditional church. But what they're doing is they're getting out and they're having the music and they're having periods of contemplative prayer and those kinds of things, and they're lighting candles and burning incense and having soft music. You know, they're going back even further into more of traditions than the traditional church in the 50s, 60s, and 70s did. So there's also a lot of confusion about those spiritual moorings. They like diversity in the types of worship gatherings. Some like traditional, some like blended, but there is a tendency toward more praise and worship that feels good and offers simple answers. And a lot of them are drawn to earlier services. In fact, one of my friends or colleagues who is at another church, and they have an 8:30 service as well as the later service. He said the 8:30 service is primarily for those who just want to get it over with and go on about their business. For those that just want to get it over with and go on about their business. But they're also looking for very simple answers and other things. Somebody to tell them, this is what you believe, not necessarily why, but this is what you believe, and this is the only way you believe. Instead of the challenge of thinking through things. And I really think part of that is because of there's so much chaos in the world and people have to think and deal with so many other different things that people, a lot of folks these days, especially in the late teens through late 30s age range, maybe even early 40s, have to deal with so many things out there that they want to be able to go someplace where somebody's going to give them the answer and going to give it to them simply, so there's someplace they don't have to think and don't have to deal with the tough questions. What are some of the goals of boomers, my generation, and Generation X and the millennials? Boomers in the 1950s, 60s, but especially the 60s and beyond, were very interested in raising a family and providing for that family, and also were interested in discovering a meaningful philosophy for life. And that oftentimes was done through rationality and rational thinking. A meaningful philosophy to help us through life and to help us provide more than just monetarily and materially for the family, but also to provide emotionally and spiritually for the family. Generation X or the millennials, their goals include raising a family, being well off financially. And I didn't put these together. These were this is a compilation of a couple of different surveys that were done. Raising a family and then being well off financially. And sometimes it's being well off financially and then raising a family. I know a lot of folks in that particular generation that, you know, they've been married for a number of years and haven't even begun thinking about having children yet because they say, and of course I've told a couple of them, you'll never get there, we're going to have children when we're financially stable and have enough money to afford to have those children and give them the things we want them to have. And my response has been, well, if you wait on that, you'll never get there. They have expectations of the ideal job, making big bucks right out of the chute. They don't want to wait and work a long time. I want the job and I want the money right out of the chute. And as Dr. Sunil Luthor at Columbia University states, what contemporary American culture advertises to them, and what they want is achievement and accomplishment to get ultimate happiness, and I want it now. Don't want it to take a long time. American culture advertises, if you think about it, we do. With our cars, with our homes, with everything else, we advertise achieving, accomplishing quickly, and getting ultimate happiness by things, by having the best of things. And they are very, very quick to try to please, especially their peers. They said, what peers think of them is more important than what anybody else thinks of them. What their closest friends think of them is much more important than what family, teachers, or anybody else in the workforce thinks of them. Especially the millennials, but some Gen X as well, are highly anxious about their image. The image they portray has got to be happy and successful all the time. Their appearance. As I said, they'll spend $100 or $300 on a pair of jeans. On the other hand, I've got sport coats in my closet that are older than my children. And one of these days, I'm going to wear them again when they come back in style. I've got them with narrow lapels, and I got them with lapels this wide, with slash pockets and other kinds of pockets. Corduroy with patches on the sleeves. When those come back again, I've got two of those. Relationships and appearance. But they want to be in the crowd, but they want to get lost in the crowd. They don't want, they want to be leaders to a certain degree, but they don't want people to ask them to do things. And we're finding that especially in church. A lot of the folks that go to the emerging mega churches are there because they're big and they want to get lost in the crowd. They want to be able to slip in and slip out, and this has been done through interviews as well. So they want to be able to slip in and slip out, and if people know they're there, that's okay. If they don't, that's okay, and don't ask me to do anything. I'll come and put in my hour or 2 hours this week, and then I can go on and do other things. Of course, we have folks in traditional church that do that too. They, as we said, they expect a fast timeline for success. Now, this is not everyone, but this is an overarching theme that is emerging among Generation X and the Millennials. And they've been overachieving since kindergarten or even before. The kids, and the kids that are entering colleges, Furman and Spartanburg Methodist and even Clemson and other places, you've got, at least since kindergarten, if not before, some of them are up at 5:30 in the morning so they can go out to the swim lesson or do the aerobics or do something else before they go eat the breakfast and then go to school, and they're in school all day, and when they come home they can't do the homework till late at night because they got this practice, this lesson, that lesson, and they get home just in time to wolf down something for supper and then do the homework and fall asleep. And they've been overachieving, many of them, since that time. Playtime, though, more and more, especially among the millennials, playtime consists more of TV and video games. And in, and this is not only my opinion, and that dollar will get you a drink machine, but in several major studies, the researchers are saying that the imaginations and the whole ability to think abstractly is starting to suffer seriously in the millennial generation, especially hands on that kind of stuff. But then again, I saw a report recently where a number of hospitals are starting to use video games to train their surgeons in better dexterity so they can do surgery quicker. We also find that Generation X and the millennials are products of uncertain times. If you think about the times since we who are the boomers have had children, among the few things that I want to list here, they have been witnesses to the Challenger disaster, the Oklahoma City bombings, Columbine, 9/11, the Columbia shuttle explosion, watched it on TV, and the replays over and over and over again. The attacks on the Amish school. Iraq. You know, when I was growing up and when Vietnam was in and all that kind of stuff, you know, we saw images of the war. But we had to wait for those images to be sent back to the States and processed to see them. Now, people watch the bombs go in and blow up the buildings in real time. Iraq, Afghanistan. And if you think about it, Melissa, John is a product of these generations, and John has been in Iraq. Lee has been in Afghanistan. Billy, in Iraq. And they're within that 20 to 30 something generation. They've not only witnessed it, they've been there. They've seen the Virginia Tech shootings and they watched that stuff. Well, they didn't watch the killings, but they watched all the other stuff take place right on a television screen. They are products of very uncertain times. And they live and have grown up in an age of immediacy. You know, I used to joke and say, hey, we've got instant coffee and turn the TV on, instantly you've got the picture, all that kind of stuff. But look at this. Laptops. Laptops. The internet. They haven't known a time when there wasn't an internet. The millennials. Email, instant messaging, cell phones and text messaging. I don't even know how to read my text messages, much less send one. Day timers. Some of us have some timers, but they have day timers. Palm Pilots, iPods, CNN's always been on, Starbucks. Google is a verb. The millennial generation, the students that are entering college now have never known a time when Google wasn't a verb. And I put quotation marks around reality TV. It's not really real. But reality TV. Beloit College in Minnesota puts out a list every year of the new entering class. And I printed off one, the class of 2011. Some of the things that, you know, as far as they're concerned, for them... they say, what Berlin Wall? Humvees minus the artillery have always been available to the public. Rush Limbaugh and the Ditto Heads have always been lambasting liberals. Those entering college this year have never rolled down a car window. Cranked it down. It's always been electric. Michael Moore has always been angry and funny. They think if they hear the Keating Five, they think that's a rock group. They've grown up with bottled water. General Motors has always been working on an electric car. Nelson Mandela has always been free and a major force in South Africa. Pete Rose never played baseball. He's always been whining about it. Rap music has always been mainstream. Religious leaders have always been telling politicians what to do or else. Off the hook has never had anything to do with a telephone. Russia has always had a multi-party political system. Women have always had the ability to be police chiefs in major cities. They were born the year Harvard Law Review editor Barack Obama announced he might run for office someday. The NBA season has always gone on and on and on and on. Half of them may have been members of the Babysitters Club. Eastern Airlines has never earned their wings. No one has ever been able to sit down comfortably to a meal of liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti. Hannibal Lecter. Being lame has to do with being dumb or inarticulate, not being disabled and unable to walk. Walmart has always been a larger retailer than Sears and has always employed more workers than GM. Wolf Blitzer has always been serving up the news on CNN. Al Gore has always been running for president or thinking about it. Let's see. When all else fails, a Prozac defense has always been a possibility. Multigrain chips have always provided healthful junk food. U2 has always been something other than a spy plane. It's been the name of a band, not a spy plane. They were introduced to Jack Nicholson as the Joker in the movie Batman. Stadiums, rock tours, and sporting events have always had corporate names. And American rock groups have always been allowed to appear in Moscow. And we could go on and on and on. They are stressed. They are pressured. They are impatient, sleep deprived, and overprogrammed. And the parents and grandparents are responsible for a lot of that overprogramming and stress. They're grade-driven to get ahead and get the job. They expect to get the job right the first time they get a job. They have higher expectations and higher need levels than the boomers. And the three main epicenters, according to James Emery White, who did a lengthy study on them, the three main epicenters of culture and where they get their values: education, the media, and the legal system, not church. And as we said last week, only 14% of Christian parents who were interviewed for the Barna survey with children aged 3 to 18, only 14% said that raising children with a strong moral and faith foundation was part of their responsibility. So where do they get their value systems from? Educational system, the media, and the legal system, not the religious system. The consequences of some of this, especially for generation, the millennial generation, is emotional and physical problems. They're highly image conscious. More and more are on medications for ADHD, depression, hyperanxiety, stress disorders, gastrointestinal disorders, eating disorders, substance abuse. The estimated use of alcohol and drug use among high school students in Greenville County is 73%. And many of them don't care about the consequences of what they do. In fact, some had that one researcher labeled the millennial generation as generation stress. Their life becomes a list of tasks to check off. They have limited coping skills, a lack of time, and ability to reflect on and process their own physical and emotional development because they're always being pushed, and driven from here to there, etc. And a 2005 survey by the American College Health Association said around 40% of entering college students had previous mental health counseling and were on medication for some kind of mental deficiency or need. 40% of entering college students in 2005. The way they approach religion and truth, moderns, that's us, the greatest generation, and boomers are considered moderns. Generation X and millennials are considered postmodern. Reason is the basis for discovering truth. We have faith in reason, in science, in logic, even in the way we look at the Bible and use tools to study the Bible. Reason. We logically work through things. Postmoderns, faith is discovered in personal experience with various conflicting views that can coexist. You can hold two almost completely opposite views and say that they're part of your faith and your vibrant faith without realizing that they actually cancel each other out, especially with the millennials. There's a blend of the ancient and modern traditions as one feels what you feel. Joel Osteen, for example. Joel Osteen is really a mixture of old-time Pentecostalism, which his father was, and modern-day pop psychology all rolled into one. And has very little to do with the Bible, or biblical understanding at all. Yet he has the largest church in the country out in Texas. But watched an interview with him, and he was asked if Christ was the only answer. He said, well, for me, Christ is the only answer. But I won't comment on the state of Hindus, Muslims, Buddhists, or others, because I don't really know the mind of God. So it might be okay that they're Buddhists and God will still get them. But for me, it's Christ. But for them, I don't know, because I don't know the mind of God, and I'm not going to try and change them. That's what he said. For moderns and denominationally defined churches continue to maintain some kind of degree of recognition, connection, or identity with the parent group. Moderns tend to not just be believers, but belongers. That's the greatest generation and boomers. Moderns tend to give to local and international missions causes. Lottie, Annie, Janie Chapman, other things. The clergy, those who are moderns, are more aware and loyal to the traditions and know more about ecclesiastical history, the history of the church. The postmoderns, Gen X and millennials, have fewer connections with denominations and have less loyalty to the denomination or the convention. And in part because they haven't been taken by parents and because we in the church haven't taught them the basics. The younger clergy, who are Gen X and millennials, and laity are less aware of the traditions and history. For example, in the Baptist churches, very few have any connection or any knowledge whatsoever about Baptist history or about Baptist principles. Most of them, even in Baptist churches, don't have a clue that there would not be a First Amendment were it not for Baptists before the Continental Congress. They're more interested in local missions and keeping their money at home. Generic forms of Christianity, they're less brand loyal. Pull it all together, it's just a generic Christianity. They consider themselves believers, but they are not joiners, much less belongers. And there's a difference in being a joiner and a belonger. You can join something, never show up. A belonger, you feel you have a stake in it and you do something with it. They will cross denominational lines for shared cultural and sometimes religious beliefs, such as inerrancy, certain political issues, prayer in the school, particular political parties. But then when that issue is settled, then they separate again and won't have anything to do with that other group until another one come up. They get easily bored with church and look for the newest programs, the most emotional worship or entertaining worship, feelings over thinking. This church, I won't mention a name, you probably know, and mentioned they want to be in the crowd but not asked to do anything. I had somebody here who was talking with someone at another church, an emerging church kind of thing, a couple of years ago. And it was someone here who is involved in several things and does several different things in the church, and was talking with this person that was a friend of theirs who goes to this other place and said, I'm doing four different things at the church. Sunday school teacher and this and this and this. And that person said, oh, well, you need to come to our church. They won't ask you to do anything. You can just come, sit, and then go. Interestingly enough, and don't want to belabor it too long, but there's a church in Anderson that recently the sermon was on hell. After the music, the band and all finished, six men completely clad in black from head to toe walked out carrying a black coffin and sat it in the middle of the stage and walked off. For the first 3 to 4 minutes, the minister's voice just kind of came from nowhere, and then all of a sudden he threw back the lid and got out. And from what one of my colleagues, who is has a very good theological background, he watched this in video over the internet. And he said for the next 40 minutes, he spent about 3 to 4 minutes dealing with traditional beliefs about heaven and hell. And he said the rest of the time was very crass and very meaningless and very shallow. Same person a few weeks ago, and Vicki told me this, her brother-in-law, who's a pastor in Rock Hill, had heard about this from a friend of his who had heard that the morning sermon was such and such. So this guy went to an afternoon sermon and sat there and said that for the sermon, they rolled a big bed out onto the stage in which the minister and his wife were seated. in their pajamas. And this guy said, he said things from there that I would not want my teenage daughters learning anywhere except at home. So, you know, it's this whole thing of what more can we do to entertain or to shock? Church responses range from continuing traditional to blended to the contemporary emerging church. Continuing traditional ideas, we hold on to the old ways. Many of those churches are plateauing or declining, and the few younger members are less committed to the church or the denomination. The continued traditional churches talk about loving God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and thinking about theology is important for many in those churches. Being transformed by the renewing of your mind. Seems to me that's in the Bible somewhere. As far as the contemporary mega or emerging church, it is always, always centered around a charismatic pastor or founder who often acts as the CEO preacher. A number of these churches, in fact, I know of three or four in the upstate where when you talk to them, you find out that the preacher doesn't do weddings, funerals, or hospital visitation. The ministries to certain group are to certain groups with specialized marketing. In fact, the marketing budgets for a lot of the emerging churches are bigger than our entire annual budget. The message is adapted to contemporary culture, and any personal instruction takes place not in Sunday school. They don't have Sunday school or other things, but it's in cell groups in people's homes if you want to go. High-energy Saturday or Sunday programs involving lengthy musical sets, large screens with flashing scenes and images, sometimes accompanied by swaying and dancing, reminiscent of a Pentecostal revivalism at best, or if you know anything about some of the rock concerts in past years, mosh pits. I call it mosh pits. One church I call mosh pit ministry at its very worst. J.E. White, who studied this at length, in his report said, actual facts don't matter about religion or spirituality. What matters is how you feel. They're looking for something that feels spiritual and smells a little supernatural. All they really know to look for is an experience. The great divorce is separating the spiritual longing from a particular faith and faith background. In fact, according to one interview from a member of an emerging church at the Grow Group or the Cell Group that takes place during the week away from church, this person said, yeah, we read a Bible verse or two, then we have a prayer, and then talk about our kids, our jobs, and sports as we have fellowship around the food we bring. That's the Bible study and the time spent together. A lot of churches have tried to go to a blended form, attempting to use elements of both traditional service and orders with more upbeat praise, some liturgical dance, skits, other elements of contemporary worship. But it's difficult there to strike a balance. There is a church, a traditional church in Anderson. I've been told by several of its members and talked to its lead pastor. During the summer, they decided they used to have two services, one traditional and one not. They decided to put the two together for the summer. And then at the end of the summer, they held a lengthy and somewhat heated meeting and finally voted to continue it until January 1, at which time they'll decide what to do. But what's really strained and heated about it is there are people who have been appointed from the contemporary side and the traditional side who are the watchdogs and are actually counting how many praise songs and how many traditional hymns and how many skits and how many this go on in the worship service. Many times what happens with a blended church is there's confusion about the identity. So what's this say for the future? Pluralism is here. It is here in the country and in the church. And the church must find ways to celebrate it without syncretism, that is, borrowing too much here and there so that you've got a very generic form, or arrogance, our way is the only way, as the position of privilege. Bill Leonard said that one of the things that has happened in our mainstream culture is that the language of religious liberty has been used by some to gain a favored position. in the culture, especially in the political culture. Congregations must reaffirm their identity, finding a place to stand theologically and spiritually with a hospitable traditionalism, thereby providing a place from which to go into the world with a message of hope and grace. Congregations need to come to terms with localism and the call to go into the larger world and relate God's message of grace even to the larger church community. Lauren Mead, who wrote a book, The Once and Future Church, said, "We need to ask, is the church's image of itself exclusive or inclusive? Both poles reflect parts of the Christian heritage." Exclusivity, that is, the church being exclusive. There are precedents there for strict enforcement of clearly stated boundaries, that is, moral boundaries, creedal boundaries, membership boundaries. Churches that practice closed communion do that. Some other churches do that, which can ensure conformity. Those are churches that want conformity and less freedom. At its worst, he writes, exclusivity becomes rigid and legalistic, separating the righteous from the unrighteous according to a man-made standard. It is also important, though, because it states that there must be a place where a decision, a belief, or an action marks the difference between who's in and who's out. Or is a church inclusive? He writes, inclusivity opens its arms to the diversity of the world, inviting the stranger into the community without question. At its best, it represents hospitality and prevenient grace, that is, acceptance before it's asked for. Prevenient grace. You accept people before they ask for your grace. The acceptance of the unacceptable. However, the danger is, at its worst, inclusivity degrades the meaning of membership into a laissez-faire. Anything goes. Doesn't matter. Show up, slip in, slip out. Doesn't matter. Mead states that we must find ways to reform and vitalize the laity for ministry, reform ideas of clergy roles, reshape ideas of church oversight, and more intentionally train laity in theology so that the front line, which is laity, I mean really, lay people can get into places every day that if I walk in, people change, or they turn and hide, or they say what they think you want them to hear instead of what's really going on. We need to train laity in theology so that the front line is adequately prepared for encountering the world in which they live, work, and play. We do that some with life questions. White says the best way to bridge the culture gap is to become a student of the culture and read between the lines in music and drama and the two most important influences from media for Generation X and the Millennials. Understanding the three E's, explanation, experience, and example. Explanation starts simply. We need to help people understand the basics, including introducing the Bible, because a lot of folks don't even bring their Bibles, much less open one. They don't know anything about it other than a few things that are spouted here and there. We need to find ways in which we can sometimes use media, whether it's film or music, etc., to help share the experience with those who are more visual in learning. Thank you, TV and video babysitters. And preaching with examples is important as well, because people need to come to us and see what a transformed life is like. Preaching with examples, that doesn't just mean from the pulpit. That means the way we live our lives, so that people can see what a transformed life is really like. Is really like. Folks, this is scary stuff too, if you think about it. I wrestle with it all the time, as do a number of other folks. If you don't have it, I can make copies. But in the latest edition of Cooperative Baptist Fellowship South Carolina's fellowship newsletter, Marion Aldridge gives the coordinator's column talking about two Baptists on an island. There's an old joke about two Baptists who were marooned on a desert island. Immediately they set a high attendance goal of 3 for Sunday school. There's only two of them, but the high attendance goal is 3. Then he goes on to talk about how, unfortunately, a lot of times churches, and he deals with churches, think that if they bring in a new pastor, a new youth person, a new this, a new that, then everything's going to be great and the numbers are going to swell by the hundreds. And that doesn't happen a whole lot. In fact, lately some of the research says that it's easier to get people to go to something new, even if there's not much substance, than it is to get them to come to something that's been around for a long time. That includes churches. But what really is good, I think, about this is he asks the question, what if a church decided that the biblical task of the pastor is to equip the saints for the work of ministry, which, by the way, is in the Bible too, and that the task of the congregation is to minister in their community? What if we really, and many of y'all take that to heart, and you do that, but what if we could convince more and more people that that is indeed the role of all of us, not just the professional staff, the vocational staff, but each and every person who has accepted Christ and who comes to the church? We would find ways that ministry would take place, even when sometimes we didn't realize it was taking place. I do this tonight not to scare folks, not to upset folks, but to say these are the realities of our world, a world in which it's very much a shopper's mentality in religion and everything else. A world in which, quite frankly, there are a lot of folks who are growing up and not having a clue about religious commitment and religious responsibility to God and to the church. And somehow we have to help change that, even just one person at a time. One life at a time. But it's our task, and it's our task to think of ways to do that. Even if it's a blending of the old and a little bit of the new. To find ways to do that so that we don't lose another generation to understanding not just the grace God offers, but the responsibility that God expects. I know it's right at 7 o'clock. I ran over tonight. Didn't anticipate running over tonight, really. But if you have questions, we can talk about those later, or you can catch me afterwards here. I didn't draw out last week, but some folks have been trying to get me to do. Next week, of course, is our Singspiration, and the following week is actually the fifth Sunday. We may deal with this one on a Sunday morning or the first Sunday night in October. When God does not answer our prayers, should we begin by examining ourselves? Could unanswered prayers reflect upon the person who is actually praying? We'll talk about that in the very near future. And I truly treasure your ministry and your input in trying to find ways to not only educate, but to challenge and to grow disciples and learners. God bless you. Go in peace. Amen.